Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. This is your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Mike Good. What's good about Mike? I'll tell you. For one thing, his writing. Mike writes a regular column called Outside the Box. It's really called Outside the Box for UFO Magazine. He's an artist, writer, iconoclast, and cosmic curmudgeon. He aims to open minds and expand consciousness by playfully poking a stick into the cage of conventional thinking. So let's all get our sticks out together and see how many sacred cows we can poke tonight while we welcome Mike to the show. Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Lance.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's so funny because I was reading one of the articles that you sent me. It's called Crapper Epiphany, The Law of Grace.
Yes.
And what's really funny is that I discovered your writing while reading a UFO magazine on the toilet.
Yeah, well, there's a connection there.
Tell me, what do you think the connection is?
It's the Tao of the Crapper.
Yeah, I guess it is. But, it's funny because I believe in UFOs and, moderate a group on Yahoo for that subject, but I've never seen one, and I have never really even read UFO magazine. And a friend of my neighbor's came by. He knows that I'm kind of a crazy old fart, and that I new age stuff. And so he had this handful of magazines, and he said somebody had just walked up to him out of the blue and said, are you into UFOs? And he said, well, no. He said, well, here, you can take these anyway. Give them to somebody who is. And so he brought him over to me, and, I didn't know where to put him, so I put him in the bathroom. And when I started reading the writing in that magazine, well, for one thing, the writers are really good writers, and your writing stood out like a sore thumb. So,
oh, well, thank you.
I just have to say that.
Well, thank you very much.
have you always, let's ask you, when did your interest in that particular subject come up, and when did you start writing so well?
Well, my interest in UFOs goes back to when I was just a kid.
Uh-huh.
I remember actually quite distinctly when it first, hit my consciousness. I was looking at some magazines, strangely enough, in my parents' bedroom, bathroom, and... So I'm sitting there bent over the toilet looking at this magazine, and I open this page, and there's two pages of these beautiful color photographs of UFOs. And I was just a kid at the time, and I'm looking at that, I'm just going, my jaw dropped. I said, wow, that is so cool, So I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, what are these things? These guys come from who knows where, outer space or something, and they're checking us out, so... From that point on, I was always quite interested in them, and what happened was I went down to my local libraries and started checking out books, and I read a bunch of books, and interestingly enough, the whole UFO thing got me interested ultimately in metaphysics, and it was just this kind of weird path, I think obviously that. There are multiple paths to enlightenment or whatever you want to call it. We all walk our own path, and mine just kind of came through this weird circuitous event, chain of events. Through being interested in UFOs of all things.
Huh. Interesting. Well, now I do kind of remember when I was a kid. I had some. My parents were bohemians, and they were just strange. They liked to drink and party and this and that and the other thing. But I do remember one time they took a trip through the desert to look for UFOs. And as a kid, I really didn't pay too much attention to what they were talking about. I tuned them out. But I do remember them stopping at a rock and looking at carvings on the rock, and they were looking to see a UFO. We never did see one, but so I guess. There was that interest even then in the 50s. Do you think that this? What do you think this manifestation is? Has it increased? Is it being concealed? It doesn't seem to. It seems to just always be right under the radar.
Yeah, right under the radar, just out of reach.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, one of the reasons that UFOs are kind of a fringy thing is that they don't really leave any material traces of their passing. You know, they're these kind of phantom things that go up in the night.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, so it's for people who are rational materialists, it's kind of a thing that's beyond their grasp, and a lot of people reject it just because of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't really claim to know what it is. There are these things that fly around in the sky. Now, I saw one when I was a teenager, but you know, the fact of the matter is that I was interested in them long before I ever saw one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people in the New Age movement talk about you know, star beings and how, you know, we really were seeded here by star beings in the first place, and that because of the way that we wanted to set up this game that we're playing of duality or polarity, that we agreed to not know what our origins were. And so, you know, that makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why there would be a non-interference clause. I think the Star Trek thing is kind of an interesting concept, that they can't interfere with other societies because that alters their freedom of choice.
Well, absolutely. You know, and ultimately that is what you know, what we're given, you know, that's the tools we're given is our consciousness, our knowledge, and you know, if freedom of choice is taken away from us, then basically we're acting as automatons, and since we're here, ultimately, at least I believe, to grow into consciousness, taking away that freedom of choice really takes away our ability to become that mm-hmm. we're supposed mm-hmm. to become. You know, you can't force a square peg into a round hole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, evolution is a natural thing. It's not something that can be forced.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another thing too that a lot of people are, you know, talking about, and that's the possibility that that we're headed for a period, as the Mayan calendars indicate, of a higher consciousness, that energies are shifting, and that there's a period of time that cycles around every, oh, I don't know, so many millions of years, and that we're approaching another one of these end cycles. And from what I've read, they say that during these periods of transition, when the physical becomes non-physical, nothing synthetic is left behind. So people ask, well, why aren't there artifacts, or why aren't there, you know, why isn't there anything that we can look at? And, well, we've got the pyramids, you know, and
mm-hmm.
they're natural, and they seem to have held up pretty well over the years. But that would explain why we don't see synthetic materials on the Earth, or why there aren't any buried spaceships, you know, floating around. And
yeah, well, we honestly don't know that. I mean,
yeah.
let's face it, you know, what knowledge we have is probably just the tiniest tip of an iceberg.
Oh.
I mean, there's a huge universe out there,
yeah.
and even a huge Earth, you know, beneath our feet that we have no awareness of.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
The past is way past. And,
yeah.
You know, what do
yeah.
we really ultimately know about it?
Yeah.
You know.
True.
Yeah. But
and what do we want to know about the present? I mean, come on, give me a break with world politics such as it is. I mean, sometimes I turn on the television and I just, well, if I see George Bush's face one more time on the television,
well, I got something here that I'd written that ties in directly to that. So,
oh, good.
So I'll just run with it here.
All right, go.
Okay. An interesting thing about our human myths is the commonality of the positive spin we put on the human condition, that it's great to be human optimism beneath it all. There's no denying the power of group delusion. This shows our very human need for ego gratification, characterizing us as always being at the top of the food chain, the best freaking creations in the whole universe, full of love and wisdom, smarter than anything. We are all that and a bag of chips. Yep, that's us, all right. Not. At the very root of this delusion is the even more common fear that we are simply not worthy. In our culture, we are literally racked with culturally imposed fears and selfish desires that work overtime to help prop up our basic lack of self-esteem. Man, my religion says that I suck, and only the church can save me from my inherent unworthiness. It's a good thing that I have learned to feel guilty about it. Crap, my neighbor has a bigger car than me. I must really suck. Well, if I go into debt up to my ears and get a bigger and better one, I can show the whole world how worthy I really am. Dang, I'm eating mass quantities of subpar food at Hometown Buffet, and that guy over there has a bigger piece of cake than I do. Life is so unfair. Maybe if I eat two pieces of that gooey processed stuff, I can feel better about myself. On and on it goes. Isn't mass delusion fun? Poppycock, balderdash, falderall. All we need to do is become conscious. If we all become aware of our interdependence on the common good, the common need for comforts, freedoms, and lack of fear, then there will never be any need for soldiers or policemen again. Becoming conscious is an act of transcending our instinctive, animalistic, self-destructive human tendencies, characterized by selfish fears and feelings of lack of worthiness. Can we actually achieve that? I believe we can. But it will take a paradigm shift in consciousness. If we persist with our present delusions, this thing can only end in one way, with our ultimate destruction as a species. Who knows? Perhaps the human animal is an experiment destined to fail. By destined, I don't mean that it is set in stone, but that we're on a collision course with self-destruction, and the only thing that will prevent that is for us to wake up from our cognitive stupor. But that can happen, and we can alter our DNA. DNA is not a rigid roadmap that determines what we are. It is a recording system, a holographic program that orders our human form. But that program can be reconfigured. Right now, it is kind of sad and broken. That is what all the above stuff is about. But we can reprogram it. And when that happens, our hologram reconfigures to become something different from what it was before. Is it always evolutionary? Hell no. Sometimes we backslide. That would explain an ignorant life form like George Bush. I was watching Shirley MacLaine on TV last night. She said we deserve George Bush. I think she makes a good point. He's the perfect poster boy to show how far off track we have gotten. He's the very symbol of the unhealthy, self-destructive delusion we have created for ourselves. We create our reality with our conscious beliefs. The fact that we collectively do not understand this does not change that very basic fact. It only means that we become victims of the chaos that ensues when we create reality unconsciously. If we construct our reality with fears, selfishness, and feelings of unworthiness, well, then we get a reality where George Bush is king of the world. But we don't have to go there. We can change it. All it takes is for enough of us to become conscious of our power to shape our reality for us to change it. It is the 100th monkey theory at work. When enough of us become aware, the others will begin to change through simple quantum osmosis. That is how reality works, and that is why we must wake up.
Wow.
That's awesome. There's my explanation for George Bush.
Wow, that is really, really good. That's good shit.
Thank you.
Wow, I couldn't have said it better. Well, as W.C. Fields would say, you took the very words right out of my mouth.
Well, thank you, Lance.
That is wonderful. You know, I was reading your stuff, and I was thinking to myself, you know, it really is simple that, you know, it's you were talking about grace and love and separation, what creates separation, and maybe just elaborate a little bit more on what you wrote there and what you just read of your writings. Where do we begin? I mean, I agree with everything you said, 1,000%.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it seems like when is that 100th monkey ever going to get to learn how to wash that damn potato?
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't have an answer to that.
Okay.
And, you know, the thing is you know, I've only been writing this stuff for about a year or so, and what happened was I woke up one day, you know, and I'm one of these guys who read the news every day and every day got kind of upset about it and said, you know, God, this this crap's got to stop, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And ultimately what happened was I woke up one day and I said, well, you know what the problem is. You know, I keep looking at it every day, and I said, I have to write about it. It's mm-hmm. that's all there is to it, mm-hmm. you know. So I woke up one morning and I said, oh, I'm a writer. Okay, let's run with that, you know.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, you must be doing something that you're, you know, a pre-incarnational contract, because you do it so well.
Oh, well, thank you.
I mean, it's almost as if, you know, people that speak so eloquently or so with such clarity are kind of like our elected spokespeople. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, when a murderer and somebody who does that is, you know, the collective spokesperson for everything we're suppressing and we're concealing and hiding about ourselves and we're in denial about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it seems to happen on a societal level that, you know, we repress things. You know, we're very, very repressed in so many different ways. And, you know, most people don't even, the parents don't even like to talk about where babies come from. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, I remember when I was a kid and I remember there were certain times when I wasn't supposed to go near the bedroom, and I figured out later what was going on, but I never knew what happened, and nobody ever told me anything. I was just so dumb, and people act like, you know, things don't happen, and then when things do happen, then they don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, when you don't do it the way, you know, they want you to, then they say, well, you're bad. Well, why don't, but, you know, and yet we can't talk about these things openly, so...
Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, life doesn't come with a, you know, a user's manual, and you know, so basically, we all end up flailing around, you know, looking for truth and stuff, and part of the big problem is just what I was reading about here is that, you know, we're not conscious people on the most part. I mean, obviously, there are people like, you know, ourselves who have a clue, but the vast majority of us don't. And like you say, until that 100th monkey comes along and learns how to wash that potato, you know, we're going to be conscious people in an unconscious world,
picking nits off of each other.
yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, you really hit the nail on the head. You know, with politics especially, it's just, you know, where could you even begin to unravel the corruption and the greed and the you know, I mean, you could just go on and on all night. That could be a whole show in itself.
Yeah,
it's a paradigm shift is what needs to happen.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm sure you must be familiar. Maybe you can explain this to me. There are groups of scientists, there may be quantum physics physicists as well, but the scientists that are pushing for a... an event horizon. Are you familiar with that?
You're talking about bringing on an Armageddon or something?
Something like that. There's a group of scientists that feel that there will be there'll be a point. It's kind of the scientific version of
revelation. Tipping point.
Yeah, a tipping point when artificial intelligence exceeds that of man and will literally be in a position to take over everything.
Wow, that's really interesting that you're saying that. I just picked up a book by the Dalai Lama, and he says some stuff in here that's really interesting, and it goes right to the heart of that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll tell you what he says here.
Oh, good. Yeah, I like the Dalai.
Yeah, he says, there's almost no area of human life today that is not touched by the efforts of science and technology. Yet, are we clear about the place of science in the totality of human life? What exactly it should do, and by what it should be governed? This last point is critical, because unless the direction of science is guided by a consciously ethical motivation, especially compassion, its effects may fail to bring benefit. They may indeed cause great harm. You know, and you know, this is a big problem, is that we're not conscious about what it is we do. Yeah,
that really does hit the core of the thing. It's almost as if, you know, I used to say it's as if humanity has just barely come out of the primordial ooze.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And yet, here we think of ourselves at the top of the food chain, and, you know, in the show previous, the Don and Wynn show, they were talking about dolphins, and a lot of people believe that dolphins are, you know, have a higher level of consciousness than we do.
Yeah, they're pretty smart fish.
Yeah, you know,
yeah.
And it's conceivable that there are much more advanced forms of life, even
absolutely.
On this little planet here, you know, the planet itself.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and this brings me to another little short piece that I have here.
Oh, good. Oh,
and
good.
And basically, as I said, you know, when I first got interested in UFOs, I started reading a lot of books, and one book just stood out head and shoulders above the others.
Mm.
It was a book by a guy by the name of Daniel Fry.
Okay.
It was a book called The White Sands Incident. And
all right.
And basically what was interesting about his story was that there was a lot of stuff in there about consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think, was kind of an early motivator in me to start looking into this kind of thing.
Huh.
So anyway, here's what I have to say about that.
Okay.
This story is Wisdom from Outer Space. A space guy made him do it. Daniel Fry claimed to have been given a missionary task. Nothing major, just changing the consciousness of mankind. Dang, those alien guys don't ask for much. According to Fry, it all started on July 4, 1950. Left without transportation at his job at the White Sands Proving Grounds in New Mexico, he took a fateful walk into the desert evening. Upon seeing a UFO alight silently just yards away from him, he reached out to touch the ship when a disembodied voice advised him, "Better not touch the hull, pal. It's still hot." With this admonition began Fry's adventure into strangeness. He was given a ride to New York in the saucer and the basics of a philosophy and science that he would teach through lectures and a small foundation he created called Understanding.
Huh.
Fry never claimed to have met extraterrestrials. He only heard a voice in his head. But it was what the voice said that was the meat in the sandwich here. The voice was a regular encyclopedia of knowledge and insights into the technical aspects of physics and the failings of human consciousness. According to the alien philosophy, there are three branches of science. Material science, as we understand it, social science, which involves how we get along with our fellow men, and spiritual science, which deals with the relationship between man and all creation.
Hmm.
According to the voice, quote, "If any civilization in the universe is to develop fully and successfully, each of the three sciences must be pursued with equal effort and diligence. The spiritual and social sciences must come first. There can be no dependable development of material science until you have first built a firm foundation of spiritual and social science." Unquote. Anyone can see how unbalanced our society is in this sense. Our material science is growing at an exponential rate, while our ability to get along with our fellow man or live in harmony with our planet are floundering. Thus, we utilize science to find creative ways to kill each other while we recklessly despoil Mother Nature. Yet we only reluctantly attach urgency to overcoming these problems. Clearly, this is short-sighted, destructive thinking. The voice goes on, quote, "Unless some ways and means are found to stimulate the growth of the spiritual and social sciences on your Earth, a time will inevitably come when emphasis on matters which are material instead of spiritual will cause your civilization to collapse. Your race is now in constant danger of total destruction by an agency which it has itself produced. Why should people be menaced by their own creations? Simply because they have not progressed enough spiritually and socially to enable them to determine the proper uses to which these creations should be put."
Hmm.
End quote. Ouch! Of course, the solution to our earthly ills is a shift in social and spiritual consciousness. Your race and your culture, however, are not doomed, this is a quote again, are not doomed to extinction. They may continue upon their upward course until they have left this danger behind them forever. The choice, you see, is yours. This is an immutable law of the universe which operates according to the free choice of the race. And we talked about this before. End quote. To this, Fry replied, "There's little doubt which choice the people would make if they had sufficient understanding and were aware of the constructive and destructive alternatives between which they should choose. This gets right to the heart of our present earthly difficulties." Hey, those outer space guys were pretty freaking smart.
That is great. That is great. Damn, I wish I could write like that.
Thank you. Well, you know, it's just my bully pulpit, my soapbox here, you know. And as you pointed out, you know, goring sacred cows, it's my favorite hobby.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I've always been a rebel too, And, you know, and it took a long time because, you know, in one of your stories you talk about a bully. And I was the one that the bullies used to pick on.
Join the club,
so,
pal.
You know, and you have you made a very good point that, you know, what you give out is what you get back.
Absolutely.
And it seems that what's happening today is a snowball effect of many, many thousands of years of you know, ignorance and, you know, throwing bones over our shoulders.
Yeah, it's reaching critical mass.
You know, people talk about, you know, 30 years from now or 40 years or 50 or 100, but I don't think we're going to make it past 2012.
Yeah, well, you know, unless something comes along to actually shift our consciousness. And, you know, that's what a lot of the prophecies say, is that's exactly what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing is etched in stone.
Yeah,
but and if we become conscious, if enough of us decide that enough is enough and we can't live this way anymore, things will change.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it only takes that 100th monkey to get out there and washing that potato you know, we're living in the world that was promised to us, you know, by Jesus, you know. It's the you know, the lion laying down with the lamb and you know, a world of peace and harmony.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you know, and it doesn't take a smart person to figure this out. You know, to just went going to the store tonight. I had a few little interactions with people, they were nice. They were nice people. We had fun, and there was love in the air. And it's so much more positive than isolating and dividing and hating this one and not liking that one and.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we just have to reach the point where we realize that we are each other.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe I'm not identically you, but, you know, in essence, we're all one. And what I do to you or what you do to me or what we do to this audience, we're doing
exactly.
To each other.
What are we doing to this audience?
I don't know. What are we doing? The audience is a participating element. We're all in this together.
You bet.
Thank goodness. And, you know, I feel like, you know, when I connect with the in the ethers out there with the people that are listening to this show and all so on and so forth, and with the guest, you know, I mean, there's supposedly a guest and there's a host and there's people listening. But, you know, when it really flows well, it's kind of like I'm just saying what the audience is trying to get me to ask or say. And then you say, or the guest says, whatever they want to hear. And it's just, it's a strange thing. It's like a synergy. It's amazing. And the energy raises all throughout the whole thing.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Gotta love that.
Well, that's so much enough about me. Now, what about you?
What about me? What would you like to know?
Well, okay, so now, we were just talking about, you know, raising consciousness and so on, and some of the guests that I've had on have been long-term abductees.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard to tell if this is, you know, what's real and what's not real. Well, you know, there's so much space in between matter that, you know, nothing is really real anyway. And so we could get into quantum physics.
Well, you're talking about abductees and
yeah.
I have a piece here. Now, I know that this is a pretty far out territory for a lot of people. I mean, you and I can talk about this and a lot of other people, but I have friends, you know, who you know, just swear off this stuff.
Oh, they'll just walk away in horror and disgust.
Yeah. But you know, the fact of the matter is that I've been involved in the UFO thing, and I was actually involved in a group with people who claimed to have been abducted.
Oh, really?
And one of the things that comes through loud and clear if you're around enough of these people is that these people have suffered some real trauma in their life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some emotional stuff going on, and you know, I can't say what it is that's going on with them, but obviously it's something, and it's something that's very upsetting. And the reason these groups spring up all over the place is because these people do not have a regular support network.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so they're out there.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, I have a piece about this very thing that I can read here. So I'll just go with it. You know, you know about. If you've read about UFO stuff, you've heard reference to high strangeness.
Yes.
You know, where a lot of the things that happen during UFO abductions just seem to be, they don't make sense to us from our understanding of reality and how it works. So this one is called One Man's Strangeness, Another Man's Ho-Hum. High strangeness, they call it. Strange, meaning unfamiliar. The UFO abduction and encounter literature is full of such accounts. We have all read reports of these types of encounters where the normal laws of physics or logic just don't seem to apply. Sure, if you want to look at it that way, how about if we consider the idea that what we call normal is not an accurate or complete picture of reality? Or maybe what we call strange is normal to other beings. This epistemological lateral shift can help explain a lot of things. Many of us try to understand the phenomenon in material terms. Our physics textbooks say things don't work that way. Then when we encounter something that does, we think that action is weird or unreal in some way. Woo-woo, supernatural, spiritual, superstitious, mumbo-jumbo. But that is only our mindset telling us that. What if reality has a deeper nature that cannot be understood in strictly material terms? What if our reality is a construct of energies which are not limited as limited as the material world we experience? What if our material world is just a lower vibration frequency in a greater hierarchy of conceptual realities? Then when a being from another reality dips into our world for a visit, the things they do normally seem strange and improbable to us. But that is just because we are looking at them the wrong way. To those other beings, this stuff is normal and not mysterious in any way. We simply lack the mental concepts to comprehend this new and strange to us, information. But if we open our minds a little, we find that adequate explanations for these things are close at hand. Metaphysics, that word that strikes laughter into the hearts of learned men, that is where we find the answers. Except I am not laughing. Jen is an Australian lady who I've become acquainted with on the internet. She is a warm and wonderful person with a very active inner life. Here's a message she recently posted online. Over the years, I have received many lessons while I slept, some very profound. Last night, I was being taught about how aliens abduct us. At my level of understanding, at this point in time, a lot of it went straight over my head. I was told the name for what they called it, and I didn't understand it at the time. All I can remember of the word is that it started with an O. The way I understood what I was being taught is this. The universe is all mind consciousness and reality holographic. They connect to the mind, and the mind consciousness is taken. Because our minds are connected to the holographic image of ourselves, we recreate that image of our body to our new surroundings. Does that make any sense? I'm still a little confused and trying to understand it more. I can only understand it from my own level of knowledge, understanding, and not their level. And so I said to her, what Jen is being told is that this type of abduction happens at the subtle level. In other words, they are not physical material experiences in the sense that we understand those terms. Many of the UFO dudes are not material beings in the same way that we are. You could say they come from another dimension, although that is not quite accurate. It is more like they operate at a vibrational frequency that is beyond our visible material experience. From many teachings, we have the concept of the subtle body. This is the energetic matrix or hologram that acts as the pattern for our material body. All matter contains this subtle energy map that determines the outer form. This subtle body is what we are dealing with in disciplines such as acupuncture or Tai Chi. Our bodies exist at the energetic level in completeness. This explains why amputees can still feel their missing limbs. It also explains why healing can be facilitated by working with the subtle body to rearrange the energy and heal the physical body as a consequence of this manipulation. In humans, this subtle energetic framework carries on it a secondary body. This is the material body. The material body is much more energetically dense than the subtle body. It is also prone to the limitations of materiality. That is, the material body can be affected from without in the realm of material experience. Thus, you can have a material body with a missing limb or other physical malformity, while the subtle body is still complete. And, of course, your material body cannot walk through walls or occupy the same space as other physical matter. So what Jen was being taught is that the abductions, or omnibus, the O word she was looking for, which means containing many things at once, are made at the subtle level. Only the subtle body is taken. This can be done by separating our consciousness, which is integral with the subtle body, from our physical body. When we lose consciousness or are knocked out, this is what happens to us. Our consciousness separates from the physical body. The physical body, though separated from the consciousness, continues to function because it contains our subconscious. The subconscious is the earthly, primal, instinctual part of our being. It is also responsible for all of our instinctual functions. It makes the heart pump, the lungs breathe, and drives our car while our mind, consciousness, is preoccupied while yakking on the phone. So if you were to stumble into the middle of this type of abduction, the abductee's physical body would still be present in the physical world. They would not be missing from their bed or what have you, but they would be unconscious, out, gone, lost to the world. That is because the consciousness has been taken, not the physical body. Furthermore, as the subtle body contains the energetic framework for the entire physical being, what has been taken is complete. All that has been left behind is the animate but unconscious physical carapace. The temporal sense of our physical body goes with us, contained in our awareness. This explains the omnibus idea of the abduction. It also explains how they can work with our body while our actual physical body is still at home in our bed. Our body is experienced as being with the abductors because we consciously reconstruct it with our awareness. Huh. Our awareness is with them, even though our actual physical body is somewhere else entirely. And because they are not strictly material beings themselves, our subtle body corresponds better to what they are. They are more familiar with this type of body. This also means that an abduction of this type results in a kind of bilocation. The subtler aspects of the self are in one place, while the dense material body is in another. This is precisely the same thing that happens to a person performing remote viewing or having an out-of-the-body experience. And I'm sure you're aware, you know about that, Lance. Yeah. Anyway, this also explains the strange features of many abductions, such as passing through walls. The subtle body is not limited by the density of the physical body. This more refined energetic passes through dense physical matter with little or no resistance. Essentially, the subtle body, our consciousness, passes through the spaces between the particles of dense matter. And we think this is weird because we know our material body cannot do that. Kind of freaky, eh? Not for the UFO dudes. Jen went further. When I awoke after this, I remembered a contact I had with a 95-year-old man on the internet who was long since passed over.
Huh.
He was very psychic, and I was talking to him and thought, my God, this man is amazing. During one conversation with him, he said to me, I would like to send you a group picture of a time in the 1940s. And I said, okay, and waited for it to be sent to me over the internet, but it was not forthcoming. Some days went by, and all of a sudden, the black-and-white picture just threw up in my mind's eye. He sent the picture to my mind. I believe this is the method that aliens project themselves to us.
Huh.
Unquote. Yep, they're all in our mind. Well, sort of. I guess that depends on where you think your mind stops and everything else begins. That high strangeness suggests that making such distinctions may be a bit presumptuous. Because these beings function in the subtle realm, at a different energetic level than the physical, they exist in a realm of mind. Mind is primal in our material world as well, but we generally get wrapped up in the density of our material experience. We believe that the material world is reality, and because of this, we tend to give short shrift to the realm of mind. We see mind as some kind of add-on accessory that is separate from our material world, but mind is the expression of consciousness. And consciousness is the constructive fabric of material reality. The material universe is essentially a pre-existing yet malleable construct devised of mind stuff.
Huh.
So if these other beings live in a reality where mind rather than matter is the currency of exchange, what sort of mind manipulations could they be capable of? Manipulating time? Creating cover memories? appearing or disappearing before our eyes, erasing these experiences from our consciousness?
Huh.
As I said earlier, we lack the perceptual concepts for such thinking. And if reality is simply a construct of consciousness, their superior understanding of such things gives them a much greater understanding of the operating principles of the universe. Their science, unlike ours, is the science of consciousness, while ours is still lying unconscious in our metaphorical bed. So we can maintain our limited mindset and call these things high strangeness. Or we can consider what implications these strange things might say about the nature of the universe and our limited grasp of the same. But to do this, we need to get past our material limitations and appreciate the amazing plasticity of consciousness. When we get to that point and begin to appreciate the power this gives us, we will be living in the new paradigm. Who knows where such a path may take us? Perhaps we may meet other beings in the mental realms, and then we will not think such things strange at all. Hang on to your propeller beanies, kids. This is going to be one wild ride.
My, my, my. It's a good thing I put my seatbelt on in the chair before I... I almost floated right out of the house.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
It'll take me the rest of my life to digest it.
Sorry about that.
No, that's really good. Now, what about then, you know, if what you're saying is true, or let's operate on the premise that it is true, then what would be the purpose of, for instance, taking bodily fluids from somebody's body? Or is that just part of the illusion or the consciousness of it? I mean,
there's a lot of speculation about what that may mean. And ultimately, you know, there's some speculation is that they need that material for recreating themselves biologically, you know, supposedly that they're different from us. But honestly, you know, when people start talking about this stuff, when you start talking about in a so-called objective way about other beings that we don't know from Adam, you're on pretty shaky ground there. And
you're right.
I'm not willing to say that they're doing this because of this,
right.
that because of that.
Right.
I mean, to say that is a presumption that I don't think I'm allowed to make. Really,
right. Well,
ultimately.
Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah. Well, no,
it is fun to talk about, though, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and, you know, a lot of this stuff, I mean, this thing I wrote here is just comes from stuff that I've read about metaphysics and my understanding of how things work.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have to say probably some of it is to some extent channeled. I mean, you know, when you get in front of a keyboard and start writing, you know, stuff pops in your head. You
oh,
know?
Absolutely.
And the fact of the matter is that, you know, we live in this universe that is, I believe, a great hologram.
Uh-huh.
You know, and Jung talked about the collective unconsciousness.
Yeah.
Or the collective unconscious. And basically what it is this etheric soup of ideas that come from everybody and everywhere in the cosmos. And, and if you're a creative person, which I am, I've always been an artist and a writer and a musician and a poet and all these things, you know, you tap into that collective unconscious and this stuff comes to you, you know. And I think that's where all creativity comes from, ultimately. Certain people are certainly attuned to being creative and to doing that kind of thing, but I think, you know, the real geniuses are the ones who are able to tap into that hologram and just, you know, pull that new substance from the ether, ultimately.
Yeah, and the difference between people who realize what's happening and those who might not might be ego, you know, they put their finger in and pull out a plum and say, "What a good boy am I?" But if truth be known, if they know they're tapping into it, then they realize that there is no personal I to take credit for it. that they're just going into the flow or the field, as Lynn Taggart says.
Yeah, well, I mean, ultimately, it's just as all the metaphysical teachings have always said, all is one and one is all.
Yeah.
That's the nature of a hologram, you know, from the tiniest particle to the biggest gross construct.
Yeah.
Everything is contained in every little piece and bit. And you have the whole universe in an atom, and you have an atom in the whole universe.
Yeah, there,
you know, you can go in and out, you know, as above, so below. It's all the same. And ultimately, I think the real problem with us being unconscious is that we don't recognize that we're all one thing.
Yeah.
You know, we're just little individual cells in this big being known as humanity. And humanity is just little individual cell in this big being called planet Earth.
Yeah.
And if we don't take care of planet Earth, if we don't take care of our fellow man, we create a situation where we're basically self-destructing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
we are acting as a cancer on our own being called humanity.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, that sure gets to the heart of the matter, doesn't it?
Yeah. But, I think ultimately most of the great truths are very simple. You know, you don't have to go very far to understand what's going on and to just, you know, be right with the world, you know.
Yeah.
I think that you know, for instance, I read a lot of stuff, and you know, there's a guy out there by the name of Ken Wilber. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah.
Well, he's this guy, very brilliant guy, you know, and he writes about he writes for this magazine called What's Enlightenment, you know, and he writes about enlightenment, and he's looking to search for enlightenment through this circuitous kind of mental gymnastics, you know. and I say to myself, you know, this guy is trying so damn hard, he must not know what enlightenment really is, you know, because enlightenment, you know, at least in Buddhist terms, is emptying the mind of preconceived notions, emptying your consciousness and just experiencing life simply.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and I have a little piece here that I wrote called "Spirituality Made Simple."
Oh, good, good.
So this will get right down to the heart of the matter.
Oh, good.
There is so much material out there on spirituality. What if you could have all that wisdom distilled down to the most simple and direct way to order our lives? It really doesn't have to be as difficult as we so often make things. In fact, clouding our mind with a lot of complicated instructions just seems to push us further from our center. What if we create a simple spirituality that enables us to live our lives with the wonder and ease of a child? How cool would that be? Very cool indeed. From the moment we pop out of our mother's womb and take our first breath, we enter into a world of seeming separation. Our first act during our lives is to cry out. Why is that? It is because we have emerged into apparent separation. We have left the communion of our mother's body and have entered into a world where we are severed from the comforts of the oneness we felt up to that point. We are thrust into a strange world where we are forced to act and function on our own. And this is where our confusion begins. As nearly all spiritual philosophies point out, our apparent separation is an illusion. In truth, we are simply individual expressions of the creative force that animates the entire universe. We are all bozos on this universal bus. We are, in fact, simply one. One universe, one life, one being. Ironically, we spend our lives trying to get back to that space where we feel at harmony and peace with our existence. We strive to regain our oneness with all creation. But the crazy truth about this is that we are already that. We just don't realize it. I recently heard that somebody had asked Jesus what were the most important things for us to remember in our daily lives. The answer was this: love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. Yeah, that's pretty simple, especially the second part. If we all love our fellow man, then we will live in a world where compassion rules and selfishness drools. Then our lives become easy. When people love and understand one another, then compassion reigns. Our burdens are lightened by the sincere concerns we share for the hardships of others. It trumps the divisiveness and strife that is always the result of selfishness. Selfishness stems from our feelings of separation. We fear that some other individual may have things better than us, so we decide to take what we can get in a selfish manner. We do this to assuage our insecurity with our apparent separateness. But if we give up our selfish desires, our separateness vanishes in an instant. We become at one with the power of the creative life force. Then we act in harmony with all creation. We again find that communion we felt in the warm comfort of our mother's womb. Love is indeed the answer here. But it is the first part of Jesus' answer that I did not get at first. Love God? Who or what is God? Why is God so needy that he requires my love to achieve fulfillment? God is the energy that animates all life and infuses all matter. It is all that is. Anything else is no thing. We can all relate to the energy that activates our heart and lungs and does the same for every living thing. It is there. Just feel your pulse. Let's call that thing God. Now the admonition to love God with all your heart makes sense. God isn't the needy one. You are. You need that life force to exist. So here it is, folks. Love your life with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. Just concentrate on doing those two things to the best of your ability, and your life will be wonderful. That is all you need to know. Now, how cool is that?
Wow, that's way cool. I want to get that in writing.
I have it in writing right here.
Oh, good. Well, you're going to have to send it to me because that's a keeper. That's a keeper. Wow, that's really good stuff. Oh, well, you know, you left me speechless.
I left you speechless. Oh, my God.
I mean, it feels so right, you know, and it just feels so good that.
Okay.
Know.
Well, yeah. That one was a warm and fuzzy one.
Yeah. Yeah. You like that one.
Okay. Well, here I can give you another one that's not so warm and fuzzy.
This one is more,
you know, taking some pretty big stabs at those sacred cows. How about that one?
All right. That'll be a good one to finish up on.
Okay. Okay, this one's called Quantum Physics and Exploding Head Syndrome.
Uh-oh.
There's an epidemic about, and it is not a fake one like those cheerfully provided by our concerned pharmaceutical companies who endeavor to save us from our restless legs and digestive ailments caused by consuming ungodly quantities of unhealthy processed foods. Nope, this one is bona fide, and it has serious consequences for your cognitive health. Since the first step to defining our ills is naming them, I will take a cue from those compassionate drug corporations and give this one a name, Exploding Head Syndrome. But unlike them, I do not stand to profit handsomely from exploiting my newfound ailment. No, I only receive the meager rewards of writing about it for a mere pittance. Well, not even that, actually. But this Exploding Head Syndrome is all the rage. It is quite fashionable among academics and intellectuals who make it their business to follow all of the latest trends in science, even if those trends have been around for decades. The root cause of this disease is quantum physics. Conventional academics have sought to squelch this annoying ailment by consuming massive doses of quantum uptake inhibitors. By refusing to accept the results of quantum experiments, they can keep the symptoms at bay. But alas, this only provides temporary relief from those pesky cranial detonations. Those results are not going away. Even Albert Einstein suffered symptoms from this dreaded disease. At least his brain, it seems, was not blasted to smithereens. Well, unless you consider carefully dissecting it into 240 pieces and storing them away in mason jars, less catastrophic than an explosion. I know I do, but I digress. Einstein referred to the results of quantum experiments in non-locality as spooky interconnectivity at a distance. He believed that quantum mechanics were fundamentally flawed. This characterization indicates an early use of quantum uptake inhibitors, but he is far from alone in this academic drug abuse. The problem is that at a quantum level, matter just does not seem to act, how can I say this, normal. Instead, matter does all sorts of hinky and unexpected things, like, for instance, failing to take any positive form until the scientist thinks about measuring, quantifying, or observing it. Or, how about quantum particles maintaining a close-knit relationship regardless of space-time considerations? The speed of light means nothing to those crazy quantum particles. Everything is instant for them, as if time and space do not exist. Are they nuts? What the hell are they thinking? Didn't they read our physics textbooks? Who do they think they are? Gosh, if they want our scientists to stop suffering those vexing cerebral blasts, they better start acting, normal. I recently picked up a philosophy magazine to see what this quantum physics fuss was all about. I know, what the hell was I thinking? Hope does spring eternal, but I was destined to be disappointed. Apparently, the academic, multiple degrees in tow, who wrote the article determined that a philosopher was needed to explain reality. Our heroic mathematician wrestled truly perplexing ideas like, this situation is characteristic of quantum effects. Making a measurement changes the state of the system being measured, unquote. When our normally predictable math is applied to quantum experiments, it does not come out right. Those quantum particles are wily math dodgers that just do whatever they like. They seem to be playing a clever shell game with our flummoxed mathematician. You can almost hear them gleefully laughing as he foolishly stomped out the flaming quantum dog-do bag left on his cognitive porch. To wit, quote here, we have no coherent picture of what is going on here. We have a theory that we cannot understand. This, nearly everyone agrees, is absolutely maddening. Sane people like a picture of what is happening and use it when doing the sums. The algebra should describe the picture. In classical mechanics, it does, but in quantum mechanics, the pictures evaporate. Quantum results mean that you are not allowed to say that an electron or a photon in motion has a definite trajectory. It has an infinite number of possible trajectories all at once until you measure it. Then it has one. This is what a mathematician's head looks like on quantum physics. Poor fellow, his gray matter virtually blasted to bits all over the pages of that stuffy journal. What a mess. Maybe I'm a bit dull, but I found myself wondering why a purported philosopher writing in a philosophy magazine was casting about for a philosopher to explain things to him. All he had to do was question his assumptions. Call me crazy, but isn't that what philosophers do? Maybe he should lay off those late nights partying with quantum uptake inhibitors. Honest, Mr. Philosopher, it is time for rehab. Fortunately, Dr. Good is here to provide that cognitive rehabilitation. Mr. Philosopher, dude, reality is not what you think it is. Since before Newton, academics have been operating in what they thought was an objective, material universe. Sorry, Einstein, it ain't so. I make no claims to being a colossal brainiac. I have no illusions that anybody will be dicing my cerebrum into little bits and preserving them in mason jars for posterity. But I also have never suffered the distress of exploding head syndrome. And here is the shameful secret to my exploding head syndrome immunity. I learned about metaphysics before I ever read about quantum physics. I know, you probably like me better when I was reading philosophy magazines. At least they have the marginal imprimatur of academic geekdom. But the key to my immunity was the fact that the abnormal findings of quantum physics offer scientific proofs for the ancient teachings of metaphysics. How about that? When quantum particles do unexpected things, they are not fooling those poor frazzled fellows. They are only doing what comes natural, responding to the attentions of the scientists. That is because at a quantum level, matter is informed by consciousness. Our thoughts and beliefs make quantum potentials actualized. The reason that exploding head syndrome happens is because those scientists objectify matter. They assume that the universe is inertly consistent and discrete from our subjective influence. These assumptions are fallacious, and the findings of quantum physics confirm that this is so. Isn't it a basic tenet of science that when evidence is not consistent with a theory, then the theory must change? Mr. Philosopher, it may be a bitter pill to swallow, but the antidote is a basic reframing of deeply ingrained epistemology. Lose those objective-subjective assumptions, and quantum physics make perfect sense. I know, it tastes icky, like eating crow, but in the end, you will feel much better, and all those disconcerting head explosions will stop, I promise. And because my cure is drug-free, the only side effect is the humbling realization that those basic things you thought you knew about reality were wrong. Yeah, it is a disturbing intellectual wedgie, but you'll get over it eventually.
Well, that's, Mike, we're out of time.
Okay.
Well, then we're going to have to take a quantum leap right out of here. Thank you for being on the show. Is there a way that people can find out more about you? Do you have a website or anything, or a place where they can read your, more of your writings?
Right. I am working on a website at this point.
Okay.
I don't have one together right now, but I will have one in the future. In the meantime, they can find me on the pages of UFO Magazine, which is available at Barnes & Noble and Tower Books.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Mike. You were terrific.
Well, thank you.
All right. Now, I'll have you back again soon, I promise.
Oh, great. Thank you so much, Lance. It's
okay,
been fun.
Good night, everybody.